नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Go speak about. Okay. Now it's in the 41st verse of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Vyavasayatmikam
Budhi
Ekeha Kurunandana
Bahusaka
He Ananta
Cha
Budhaya Avyavasayinam Vyavasayatmika Budhir
Ekeha
Kurunandana Bahusaka Hyanantascha Budhaya Vyavasayinam Vyavasayatmika Budhi Ekeha Kurunandana Bahusaka Hyanantascha Budhaya Vyavasayinam Translation. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. Their aim is one. O beloved son of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. The Chaitanya Charitamrita states, Shraddha Shabda Vishvasakahi Sudridhanishchai Krishna Bhakti Koile Sarva Karma Kritahoi. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family, traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruitive activities are engagements of one's reactions for past good and bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject of dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of material conception of life. I will repeat this key sentence in this purport. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. A person in Krishna consciousness is a rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva, Krishna, is the root of all manifested causes. And by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches. So by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. Service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practice under the able guidance of a spiritual master, who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student, and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna. And one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. Srila Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur instructs us in his famous prayers to the spiritual master. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasada, yasya prasadam nagatih kutopi, dhyayan stuvam stasyaya sastri sanyam, vandei guru sri charanaravindam. By satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied. And by not satisfying the spiritual master, there is no chance of being promoted to the plane of Krishna consciousness. I should therefore meditate and pray for his mercy 3 times a day and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, my spiritual master. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically but practically. When there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activity, one who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted to various types of fruitive acts. Okay. Vyavasayatmika buddhiha keha kuru nandana bahusha kakhya nantascha buddhaya vyavasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. O beloved son of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gurava Madhacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarini Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vivacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Let's talk a little bit about this verse, which is one of very important verses of Bhagavad Gita. Because in this verse, Sri Krishna explains what happens with a person when he acquires faith in something which is beyond the range of this material world. Later on in the 17th chapter, he will say that everyone believes in something. There is not a single person in this world who doesn't believe in anything. Those people who claim that I am atheist and I don't believe in anything, they believe that they don't believe in anything. It's still a belief. It's still a conception in life and still some kind of faith. You know, and they say there is no God, there is no God, and they have to believe that there is no God. So it's no difference. Krishna himself says, Shraddhamaya Yam Purusha, that Purusha, or conditioned living entity in this world, Shraddhamaya, means that he is made of faith. And faith, or Shraddha, means trust. You have to trust something, somebody. You know, we cannot live without the faith. Because we have to always trust somebody, something. You know, we trust the government, we trust the, you know, apothec, then they give us medicine, and doctors, and lawyers. All those people who are not really worthy of being trusted. But still we do believe in them. And basically our conception is based on this particular principle of faith, which we have to very clearly understand. But when the faith is invested in something temporary, and that's basically what people are doing, they believe in something which is really not worthy of this trust. You know, like we believe our near and dear ones. We believe our wife. Which is really not a very good proposition. We believe our husband. Something like this. Like, also Sukadeva Goswami says that this is all people who surround us, they are fallible soldiers. We trust in them. We think they protect us, but they're fallible. You know, we surround ourselves by all these fallible soldiers, and we think, you know, now I'm safe. Because there is this insecurity deep down within the heart of everyone. But this face, this kind of face, which is called conditioned face or Shraddha within the modes of material nature, is not really something special. This kind of face which people have in the objects of this world is divided according to the modes of material nature into sattvika, rajasika, and tamasika. But as Prabhupada says, it's artificial. It's a very interesting statement, because this artificial face, it's artificial because it more or less reinforces our false conception of life. Because we believe in something according to our conception of life. And our conception of life is essentially material. We believe that we are this body. And because we are this body, the face or the conception which we have, the understanding which we have, is more or less the support of the same kind of belief, so to speak. So we think we are this body, and we identify ourselves with the body. And when we believe in this kind of conception, it more or less keeps us on the same level. Prabhupada says that it's artificial because nothing happens. You know, you believe, and you become a very ardent believer in something, but really nothing changes within your heart. You remain where you are. When people go to gyms, there is a very nice machine there, when you can run, jogging machine. You know, you turn it on and you jog and 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 jog. But you remain in the same place. You're working so hard. You're jogging and jogging and jogging, but nothing happened. Except that you get some, you know, fatigue in your limbs. So in the same way, when people believe in something and act according to this belief, and if their belief is more or less based on this material situation in which they are this, doing the same thing. They are jogging and jogging and jogging, but nothing happens. They just get tired. That's it. That's more or less the situation of people about whom Krishna says, Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya pahrita chetasam, that their intelligence is stolen by this Bhoga and Aishwarya, this sense enjoyment and some false sense of power. Aishwarya means opulence, but opulence also brings power. Aishwarya is coming from this word Ishvara. Ishvara means to have the power, the ruler, controller. So, Bhoga Aishwarya prasaktanam taya pahrita chetasam, Krishna says that these people, they lose their marbles. They're not really sane. Because they believe in something which is not worthy of being the object of our faith. Like I'm coming from Russian background. And in Russia, the people, they tried for 70 years, for 70 plus years, they tried to arrange the whole system of the state as a religion without God. Basically, they had everything. Oh, there was God there. The name of this God, the holy name of this God was Lenin. You know, they put his bones into a big coffin, they mummied him. And people would worship him, getting his darshan, you know, this is samadhi of a great saint. He's, they would come and to see his dead body. And they would do all kinds of religious rituals and religious, or pseudo-religious rituals, and, you know, to give people faith, because faith is necessary. But ultimately this faith leads nowhere. That's the problem. It's just you remain where you are and nothing really changes. So what Krishna says here that there is an amazing kind of faith which is beyond this sattvika, rajasika and tamasika faith, and which has a completely different quality, which actually is capable of changing your life. As far as the other kind of faith, they're not changing your life. They just, you're more or less, you know, kind of nourish the same situation which you are in now. But there is something which can take you into completely different dimension. And here he says, or he speaks about this kind of faith, and he says, when person acquires this faith in something sublime, which is beyond the modes of material nature, which is really beyond our sense perception. He says that, he gives this definition, that the faith has to be something which is, the faith should be invested into something sublime. Sublime means beyond sense perception. Sublime means not destructible. Because what is the use in believing in something which is ultimately can be destroyed? So when you have this faith, that this faith is really making revolution within your heart. He says that your life becomes totally different because your intelligence becomes different. He says, if you have this faith into something which is ultimate goal of life, which is beyond this world, then everything else is included and your mind becomes one. Whereas if you have faith in something which is not that high, then your mind becomes split into many different roles and situations, your intelligence becomes split. You have so many different goals, and you're trying to pursue this goal and that goal and this goal, and ultimately you don't know who you are, because when you're pursuing some goal, you're more or less identifying yourself with this goal. I want this, and I want this, and I want that, and I want that, and ultimately I don't know who is this I who wants all these things. In the process of wanting or putting this goal and that goal, I'm losing myself. Like, there is this big management guru, Stephen Covey. He's very famous, and he's good. Good in one sense. It's a good theory, it doesn't work, but it's very nice theory. He himself admits it. But he teaches people how to organize their life, how to organize their business. And he says, you have to, you know, he says that the step number one, you identify all the roles which you are playing in this world. And, you know, you start thinking, what are the roles which I'm playing? I'm the mother, and I'm the father, and I'm the parent, and I'm the son, and I'm the worker, and I'm manager, and I'm what else? I don't know. You know, and he says, you write down all the roles. And amazingly, you know, you find out that you have so many roles which you are playing. I am a friend of this person, and for this person I am a friend. And this means I have my mask, you know, and I'm playing this role. And I'm the son of this person, and therefore I have to behave accordingly. I'm the manager of these people, therefore I have to, you know, really punish them. And I'm, you know, I'm the subordinate of this guy who is real rascal, and therefore I have to play a completely different role and behave completely differently. And he says, in each of these roles, you have to put down the goal. You know, I play this role, and what do I want? What do I really want from this relationship? What I want to achieve to be happy? And he says, when you do this, and when you achieve all these roles, you become really happy. Krishna says, forget it. That's what he says here in this verse, because he says, when you have so many roles and so many goals, and you're trying to pursue this goal and this goal, ultimately you will not achieve any goals, and you will be totally frustrated. There is a Russian saying, if you want to chase two rabbits at once, you will not you will not catch anyone. Just imagine two rabbits are running. And you are trying to catch this rabbit and that rabbit. Doesn't work. Because you are one. But your intelligence is many-branched. You divided your intelligence and you want to achieve this goal and that goal, and you don't know really what you're doing. And ultimately what happens, this is the most difficult situation, you lose yourself because you forget who you are. You know, you're just really lost, you know, you don't know. You know. And it's really true. It's really true, especially, you know, anyway, so... And his Krishna says, when it is like this, when you enticed by all these allurements of material life, and there are so many allurements, the whole material life is specifically made in such a way to allure us. You go along the street, you know, and you see something, and it's nicely packaged, and it's so nice, and it's, you know, glistening and glowing, and it's so nice, and you think, oh, I want this. Just 1 second ago, you didn't want this, you didn't have this desire, you don't really need it, but you see, oh, yeah, I need it. You know? Nowadays, the God for people is TV set. This is their guru, you know. This is one eye guru. There's only one eye. And people believe everything which is being said on the TV. And the main thing, you know, there is this American saying, in God we trust. So, but now actually people trust in TV. They don't trust in God, but they trust in TV. And on TV, what they do with you, how they cheat you, how they divide your intelligence. They show some ad, you know, some stupid guy is drinking some carbonated water, which is little brownies, you know. He says, oh, this is the key to success in life. I became so strong because I drink this Coke. And you believe it. People do believe it. It works. They spend millions of dollars for the stupid ads because it works. Because really, in this way, they implant all these different desires for sense gratification. And they constantly work, you know, to do this. They invent new model, and then they their main job is to explain to you that you need it. You know. They invent on this stupid garbage, and then they have to sell it, basically force upon you all this stuff. But what happens, what Krishna says, bhakusakakhyanantascha, buddhaya vyavasayana, these people who are allured by all these stupid things, who basically waste their life in pursuing all these trivial goals, they will never have resolute intelligence. And resolute intelligence means they will never have, they will never be in peace with themselves. Because they don't know who they are. They will never be able to really understand who they are. In Mahabharata, Prabhupada quotes this verse from Udyoga Parvam, Mahabharata. There is a very nice description of five kinds of ignorance, which everyone is more or less sharing in this world. Because everyone is ignorant. We are very ignorant people, unfortunately. So, there it is said in this verse that there is five kinds of ignorance. And the first kind of ignorance is that we identify ourselves with the body. We think, I am this body, and we don't know that there is a soul which has nothing to do with material body. The soul which is just using the body as the mechanism. As Krishna says, that the soul is within the body, and the body is like a machine, like a car, and the soul is driving. And it's totally identified with the car. And because it identifies with the car, you know, whatever happens with the car, you know, you think, oh, I'm smashed. If somebody smashes the car, you think, oh, I'm smashed. You're not smashed, stupid guy. You are hale and hearty. healthy, but the car is smashed. But you identified yourself. And you identify yourself through this intelligence, and therefore it is said in this verse of Mahabharata that the first kind of ignorance, the step number one which we do, is that we identify ourselves with the body. But then the next step which we do, very logical, totally logical, because everything after this first step is logical, but the mistake is in the first step, you know, when you try to solve some mathematical, you know, task or riddle, or how you call it, some equation. If you make the mistake in the very first action or whatever, then whatever you do afterwards doesn't matter. The mistake is already there. So, as I said, that the first mistake which you can do, you identify yourself. I'm this body, you know, and that's it. And then the next very logical step, after that everything is very logical, very, very wise, but it's all wrong. The next point is that you make the standard of enjoyment, material enjoyment. The standard of your happiness, material enjoyment. You think, to be happy, I have to get all these material enjoyments. That's logical, because you are this body, and this body needs something, and you know, you think that if you get this, then you're happy. And it doesn't dawn on you that you have been trying to become happy in this way so many, you know, eons, so many billions of years, and it didn't work. It doesn't work. The material enjoyment, I mean, sometimes I feel bad when I speak this, because it's really destroying our life. but it's not. It's not. There's nothing really good about material enjoyment. First of all, material enjoyment, there are so many defects in material enjoyment. First of all, material enjoyment sooner or later will end. And you will be so frustrated. And even during this enjoyment, you think, oh, soon it will end, oh my goodness. And the whole enjoyment is spoiled because of this. Second of all, it enslaves you. This is perhaps the most horrible part of material enjoyment. You test this enjoyment. You get some taste for it. You get some little experience of this enjoyment. And you want to have it again and again and again. And very soon, you become the slave of this enjoyment. It's not you who is enjoying, it's this enjoyment is enjoying you. It becomes your master. You know, some people drink and they say, oh, this is so nice. And then they drink and drink and drink, and then they cannot stop drinking. They're just drinking and drinking and drinking, and they're totally dull, and this material enjoyment is saying, look, he's my servant. You know, people, they're serving this material enjoyment. There is this very nice verse from Padyavali of Rupa Goswami. Kamadina kati, nakatida palita durmideshan. Tesham jatamai, nakaruna natrapana pasanti. He says, Kamadina, starting from this kama, from this lust, I was trying to serve all these masters of mine. Lust is my master, and I'm trying to serve and appease him and please him and satisfy him and saying, you know, please be merciful to me. But he says, nakaruna natrapana pasanti. This guy doesn't have karuna to me. He is not merciful to me. He doesn't give me peace. No pasanti. You know. Just leave me alone. He's just pushing me more and more and more and more. And there are so many other problems connected with material enjoyments. And ultimately, even if you get material enjoyments, what happens? You know, you get this material enjoyment and more and more, and it becomes boring, and you have to increase the dose. Like people who take drugs. It's nice. I never tried it, but they say it's nice. You get some kind of intoxicated state of consciousness, some change state, and it's, you know, it's interesting, you know, some experience is there. So, but then, you know, you get it again, and it's again nice, but then you get it again, and you feel something is lacking. You're still not satisfied. And you need to get it more and more and more, and you're bored, and that still you're the slave, and still you have to do it. And the satisfaction does not come. That's the problem, you know. We tried it. Didn't you try it? Who tried material enjoyment? Does it work? No, you still want more. You still want something else. You're still not satisfied. And still there is no peace. So, and this is the second kind of ignorance which is there, which is all-pervading. Because you think your body, you made the standard of your happiness. You think that the way to be happy is to get material enjoyments. And then because of this, the next manifestation of our ignorance is disturbance. You disturb. That's it. You're constantly, totally disturbed. You think, you know, I need to get this and this and this and this. You know, like in America. In America, people are the most clever. All these capitalists, all these exploiters, they're clever, the most clever people in the world. You know, all the people there in America, I was there several times, they're all slaves. They pay all this, you know, they have these nice magazines, nice glossy magazines, and there are so many different things there. And you look at these magazines and, you know, I say, I need this and this and this. And they say, very cheap. Everything is very cheap. You just pay a little bit, $5. And then you pay, you know, $5 till the rest of your life. And now it will be yours. And people are paying for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. They already forgot what was it, but still paying for it. Totally, totally. And they have to work so hard because the bills keep on coming, 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 coming. And they're bewildered. So anxiety is always there. Because this, you know, because you always want something, you're never satisfied, there is no peace, you're always in anxiety, and you try to do more, 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 and more. And it's like snowball. It's just rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling, and there's no end to this. And then the next manifestation of ignorance, this is we're all talking about very nice subject matter, which is very near and dear to every one of us. The next manifestation of our ignorance is lamentation, which is a natural consequence of this. Because of this disturbance, because of this situation, you lament. Oh my goodness, it was so nice a few years before, but now it's so bad. When I was young, it was so nice. But it was not nice there. Because you just forgot. You just think it was nice. You forgot all the anxieties which were there, all the disturbances which were there. You know, you think, it was so nice, you know. What was nice? You were a stupid guy. You didn't know anything. It was nothing nice. But people lament, 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 and they become morose, and they lament, and they become bitter. You know, you look at these old people. The older one becomes, the bitter he becomes. If he leads this impious life, if he leads this life of sense gratification, then the natural result, the only result actually, is that you become bitter, frustrated, and you become totally envious of everyone who is little younger than you. This is the result. It's a fact. If you lead a pious life, you become satisfied. And actually, I once consulted with one astrologer. He's a very good astrologer. And he looked at my chart. And he started, you know, doing like this. And then he started saying, you will have this difficulty, that difficulty, and this so difficult, and this so difficult. I asked, why did you do like this? If it's so difficult, you know. I thought you saw something nice there. He said, it's a very nice life. I said, how come it's nice if it's so difficult? He said, this period is difficult, and after that it's even more difficult, and after that it's even more difficult. He said, because there is a special pattern in the life of pious people and impious people. Usually, impious people, the beginning of their life is very nice. Very easygoing and very nice and everything is peachy. But the rest of the life, the end of the life is miserable. And the pious people, they have struggles and they're so difficult in the beginning. But the rest of the life, the end of the life is nice. And you have a very nice end of the life. I said, thank you very much. He said, there is a lot of struggle, but you will have very peaceful end. I said, It's nice. But that's a fact. You know, if you are leading a wrong life, then the snowball, in the beginning it may appear or it may seem something nice. And you think, you know, I will achieve something, I will be successful, I will really, you know, I will make it. Nobody else made it, but I will make it. Of course, sure. But then at the end, you know, the more your life goes on, you become more and more and more and more frustrated. And ultimately, you become so frustrated, you don't know what to do. I recently, you know, I'm flying a lot, so sometimes I read all these magazines, which are the useless magazines. But it gives you a lot of nice information for the preaching. So there was a nice article there about famous French actor. He's a star, Alain Delon. He's so famous. He lives in a mansion, huge mansion, you know, huge, very expensive. And he lives with 5 dogs alone there. 5 dogs. And he says, these 5 persons, they're the only one who love me. And he wants to commit suicide. He openly says this. I don't know, what is it? He's the only meaning of my life. He's old now. You know, he's so famous. He's so handsome, you know. He's a star, number one, you know. He's so frustrated now. He doesn't know what to do. Because the whole life is based on the wrong foundation. The foundation of life is wrong. And therefore, it is said in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, lamentation is a natural consequence of this. This is the 4th kind of ignorance. And then the 5th kind of ignorance is very interesting. The final. The epitome of ignorance is that you see this world separate from God. This is the 5th kind of false or wrong conception. You look in this world, and because of all this, because of this specific or particular state of consciousness, you cannot see the connection between this world and God. And you think that the world is separate from God. Whereas it's not. God is within our heart. He is everywhere. He sees whatever we do. He's everywhere. You know, He is the closest friend. He says, Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheswaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gatvamam santim mirishati. He says, whoever knows me, that I am the best friend, that I am beneficiary of all the sacrifices which you do, whoever knows me and all the tapasya which you do, I am accepting this. I am the goal. In other words, he says, in all the relationship which you have, I am the goal. And whoever knows me, that there is this person who accepts all our goals, all our offerings, somebody who is the closest friend of ours, somebody who is taking care about us since time immemorial, somebody who helped us the most, somebody who really, you know, he says, those who know me in this way, they become peaceful. They become happy, because to become peaceful is tantamount of being happy. You cannot be happy. Krishna himself says, "Ashantasya kutah sukham." Whereas the question of happiness, if you don't have shanti, if you don't have peace. So he says, this is the peace formula. Prabhupada used to say, he once made a demonstration. There was this big United Nations building, and people used to go there and do some, you know, peace march and something like this. So once he took all the devotees and he said, let's do the real march of peace. And he says, this is the formula of peace. If you want to be peaceful, if you want to have the peace in the world, it should be actually written there on the wall of this United Nations. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram sukhridam sarva bhutanam gatvamam shantir richati. You can only have peace within yourself if you know that there is God and He is your only goal. And that's exactly what Krishna speaks about in this verse, when he says that when you acquire this faith in God, and when you understand that God is what you need, that you don't need anything else, or if you achieve God, everything else is included. It's there. It's all in one. You don't have to run after so many rabbits. around you. You just have this one goal, and you go for this goal. And he says, this person becomes resolute in his intelligence, and everything else comes automatically. Prabhupada explains this. Prabhupada explains that when one understands, I'm soul, and there is no doubt about it. I'm soul, everyone knows it. And everyone, you know, it's another subject matter to prove that we're soul, but it's obvious. It is obvious. Krishna says, Nasato vidyate bhavana bhava vidyate sataha ubayora vidrishtam tas tvanayos tattva darshi bihi. He says, those who know the truth, tattva darshi, those who see the truth, who experience the truth, they say that if something exists, it exists eternally. This is actually one Greek philosopher, good philosopher, one of the best, I forgot his name. He said the same thing. He said, if something exists, it must exist eternally. And we exist. Right? We do exist. And he says, if something is changing, it doesn't exist. So, the body, we exist. I exist. I know I exist. And I know I exist eternally. I know. I know. You know, that's so obvious. I exist. But the body doesn't exist. It's dumb. It's already dead. We're just, you know, carrying this dead body, and it's, you know, it's becoming progressively more and more dead. It's rotting right now. It emanates a bad smell, and, you know, and all these things. It's dead. But I exist. The soul exists. And therefore, Prabhupada says, when you get this faith, then automatically you acquire faith in God, whom you may not know now, but you know that this is the goal. This is the goal of my life. And immediately everything falls in place. Before that, you were running around and you were trying to become happy by artificial means, by, you know, trying to find. But immediately you become happy by this one simple process. There is God, and I need God. That's it. So simple. Because God is, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, God is all-pervading consciousness. He is the huge consciousness, Vibhu. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that there is Vibhu. Vibhu means huge. Vibhu means unlimited. And you are? Are you unlimited? No, I'm frustratingly limited. He is complete whole, and I am a complete whole. He is the complete, absolute, and I am tiny, small. And because I am incomplete by nature, I can only be happy when I am in contact with complete. Everyone is trying to become more and more complete. Why a male wants to have a female near? Because there is a sense of more completeness. He is incomplete, and he says, let me find somebody else who is, and I will become complete whole. You know? I'll have my Radharani nearby. we will compose a complete whole. But the underlying principle is not that. Underlying principle is that I'm incomplete, and I'm trying to become more complete by adding nearby somebody who is incomplete, but two incompletes will never make one complete. You will still remain incomplete. You will still remain imperfect. So what you need as dependent living entity, as a tiny particle of consciousness, you need the contact with complete whole, with complete perfect being who is Vibhu. You are Anu, you are small, and you are dependent. We are all dependent. You know? And if you think you are not, you are fool number one. You know? We are dependent. But we don't know whom we should depend upon. And we should seek dependence. Like Prabhupada, he has very nice article, very nice lecture, which he gave in Nairobi. Nairobi is an African country or whatever. And they all, you know, they were striving for independence. They were under French people or under English, no matter, you know, and they're striving, you know, we will become independent, you know. And then when people or country gains independence, they declare this, you know, declaration of independence. So Prabhupada gave a lecture in Nairobi, which is entitled Declaration of Dependence. This is what we have to declare. Because to declare independence is foolish. We are dependent. Dependent by our very nature. What we have to declare, our dependence. You know, from now on, I'm dependent on God. This is what I need. And as soon as it happens, as soon as this mystical process happens, when I acquire this faith that this God and this is me, and I have to really strive for Him, then immediately, ekeha kuru nandana, I become happy. Because my intelligence becomes one. And I know who I am eternally. All other roles which I play in different capacities and in different goals are temporary. And they will be finished. And therefore I don't know really who I am. But there is only one role which is eternal, which is not changeable, and which you can always be this. You know, this should be the background of our life. I am who? Who I am? Who I am? Because I am dependent on the Supreme Lord. I'm the servant. And nobody can deprive you of this service. You can always be the servant. You can always think about Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't need your labor, you know. He's not, you know, irritated guy, you know, old guy who wants to enslave you. No. No. He just, what he says, what is the service? You know, you turned away from him. You said, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And he says, really? Did you think nicely about it? Please think twice. He said, no, I don't want to have anything to do. And you slammed the door and you said, you know, you be on your own and I'll be my own. I'll make it, you know, like all this young, rebellious, foolish boys. They say, you know, they slam the door. They say, no, I'm independent now. And Krishna says, but please remember, if you want to come back, I'm waiting for you. So he says, if you want to serve me, it's simple. You just think about it. You wanted to turn away from me. You wanted to be on your own. Okay, it didn't work. Did it work? Please tell me honestly. Did it work? It didn't work. No, it didn't work. You didn't become happy. So he says, if you want to come back, just think about me. And this is what service means. And just remember that you're a servant. You're not master in any position of life. And it means that you have to serve, and you can always serve. To be master is so difficult. It's so troublesome. It's so... it is difficult. Really, it's difficult. So much headache is there, you know, to always be master. But to be servant is easy. You know, it's so simple. You know, you just serve. You just have this, you know, natural, humble position. Once Hridayananda Maharaj, he made a very nice statement. He said that if you think that you're big, and we all tend to think that we're very big, then your problems will be also very big. So big that ultimately they will swallow you. And if you think that you're small, the problems are also very small. You know, it all depends on your conception about yourself. If you think you're big, you will be in trouble all the time, 24 hours a day. And the bigger you think you are, the more in trouble you will be. And the only thing which you have to know is to be what you are. And we're always what we are. We're tiny spirit soul. We are, you know, servants, and we're not big. And because we're not big, we don't have any problems. Because we're so small, you know, there is no room for problems. We're so tiny. You know, that's what you are. I'm small, insignificant. And it's nice, I'm very happy, you know, because that's what I am. And I'm dependent on the Lord, and that's His duty, you know. It's His anxiety. He has to be in anxiety. He's big. You know, I'm small, and I'm dependent on Him. And here Krishna says in this verse that, you know, if you acquire this mentality, this faith, all your problems will be solved. And this will always be with you. This will always make you happy. There was one story in my life when I just became a devotee. I didn't even become devotee. I started chanting. I didn't know who Krishna is. I didn't know who Rama is. I didn't know what Hare is. I was just chanting because somebody told me that you should chant. And I started chanting. And somehow or other, sometimes I was chanting and I said, what are you doing? Who is this Krishna? Who is this Rama? What is this Hare? Why do you chant? But I still was chanting. So I got in trouble, you know. Externally, I got in so much trouble. The KGB came to me, they started asking me, who is this Krishna? I said, I don't know who is this Krishna. I got in so much trouble. And then, you know, and they said to me that we will stop you from doing all this PhD and all your career will be spoiled. But somehow or other, I was not afraid because I was so happy. You know, there was something was wrong with me because I was so morose all the time before, and I was so happy after that. Because the happiness naturally comes when you acquire or when you are in your natural state of consciousness, where your position is natural. And our natural position is to be the soul, and we are the soul. And when we artificially try to puff up our situation in life, it's just we're asking for troubles. And the happiness comes naturally. And here Prabhupada explains in the purport following Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that you can remain in this position of firm faith, vyavasayatmika buddhi, only if you have spiritual master, only if you're under somebody. If you are on your own, you'll tend to become puffed up. But the way to remain humble and to remain real is to have spiritual master and to follow his guidance. And that's what we have to aspire for. We have to really understand that my meaning of my life is to be with God and to be myself. And to be myself I can only if I am in the association of devotees, if I am reading these books, and if I am following the instructions of my spiritual master. Thank you very much. I'm really sorry. I didn't know that it's so late. I'm sorry. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? We just...
You're saying about focus. Oftentimes, when you do devotional service, there's so much opportunity there that you want to do everything. So you try.
I know. Don't tell me. I know.
But you can also damage yourself that way. So
yeah.
How you balance?
What you really have to judge to make the priorities in your life, even in devotional life, because there may be some distractions, so to speak, or you know, we have this opportunity and that opportunity. We really have to judge according to this final result and final achievement. And that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. Will this particular, you know, goal in devotional service, so to speak, within the realm of devotional service, make me closer to my spiritual master? Will this kind of thing or achievement or whatever be pleasing to God? And basically, what you have to do, something which is natural for you. You shouldn't really be too ambitious in your devotional service because it's still material consciousness. You know, you still want to do something big. You know, it's good to do something big, but you have to be natural. And you have to set the goals according to your nature and according to, you know, and act in such a way that it's pleasing. Pleasing to the devotees, pleasing to the spiritual master. That's it. If achieving this particular goal in devotional service means that you offend everyone and you smash everyone and you know exploit everyone around you, this is not devotional service. So devotional service is a certain attitude within the heart. And when the attitude is right, when the heart is right, then you know this you should pursue and this is not that important. So basically what we have to strive for, as Prabhupada says, there are many things which take place automatically. We don't need the complete manual how we do every step in devotional service, but the main thing is to have the heart in the right place. If the heart is situated rightly, if it is really devotional, then everything else falls into place. You know, you see through the heart. And for that you have to really see the goal. Because you can only have your heart in the right place if you have the goal, the proper goal, and the proper vision of the goal, and the proper path to the goal. So this is what it is. This is what this verse is all about.